Those are all new muscles to flex and new sort of neural pathways and communication habits to put into place. And you have to practice them. And so if you say that you really value inclusivity and psychological safety and, you know, personal development, you have to make the space for those things to be done and for people to learn and get better at doing those things.
You're listening to Ambition Out Loud, the podcast for ambitious women tired of being underestimated and undervalued at work. Together, we're tackling workplace sexism, our own insecurities and self-doubt, and getting practical advice to move our careers forward. I'm your host, Nicole Magoo, and I'm an ambitious woman.
Swing, you should have seen that final show. I'm gonna go down swinging, and long after I am gone, when you hear that melody, you'll still remember me. That's how this girl is gonna carry on.
Gaming is often dismissed as being purely recreational, but it's actually a highly effective tool for learning and team development. Today, Alex Sukman is joining me to dive into a topic that leaders often overlook. Alex is the CEO and co-founder of Barometer XP, a games-as-a-service company committed to creating positive impact through play. Its holistic, human-focused approach leverages fun and creative challenges to help teams build healthy relationships, elevate diverse perspectives, foster change, and catalyze innovation. She received her Master's of Public Policy from the George Washington University and Bachelor's in Psychology from Colby College. She's also a certified PMP and DISC coach. Alex is a woman on a mission to transform workplaces from the inside out. She's here to bring an end to people feeling stifled and unappreciated at work. I hope today's episode inspires you to leverage the creative power of play. Alex, thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm so excited to talk with you, Nicole.
So I recently saw a LinkedIn post where you mentioned speaking at ATD 23 and how that was a highly unexpected turn of events in your career. Could you start maybe just by taking us through your career journey a bit? Where did you start? Did you ever imagine yourself as the co-founder and CEO of a games as a services company? And how did you end up at ATD 23?
I never imagined it. If I could go back and tell my 20-year-old self some advice, I would say, calm down. You can't know everything right now. You just have to trust your gut and make decisions based on that. Initially, when I was in college, I was a psychology major and wanted to be a clinical psychologist. I have always loved helping people and have been someone that people come to for advice with problems and was like, perfect. Like, that seems to be the great career path for me. But realized very quickly through a couple of internship opportunities I did at mental health centers that I am way too high of an empath for that. And I would feel very burnt out very quickly from people's emotional stories and trying to take everything on myself. So I learned about public policy and health policy and figured, okay, that's a way to solve the same problems, but just from a more macro level. And I moved down to DC after college, which is the place to be if you're interested in public policy. And I loved it. I love the work I did. The first job I had was a study coordinator for a pediatric mental health study. And then I went to work for an association of state Medicaid and state health and human service director agencies. and was doing state and federal policy and the interplay between the two. Had a couple of different jobs in the policy world and really loved it. Got my master's in that and felt like that was going to be my career for a long time. But what I started to notice is that in all of the places that I worked, you had really smart, very highly educated people who felt really passionately about their work and the impact that their work was having. But the workplaces themselves were really disorganized, often to a point of being dysfunctional. Things like there weren't simple processes in place, or there weren't clear job descriptions and trajectories for growth. So people didn't really know what they were doing and who was doing what and how they could grow. It was a lot of very reactive chaos on all fronts. So as a very young and motivated problem solver, I was like, oh, you know, I can fix this. I can just create a process for this, or I can create a system for that. I ended up shifting at the place I was working into a more operations and organizational development role internally to sort of solve those problems that I was experiencing, that I was seeing so many other people experience. And I think the biggest thing that drew me to that was feeling really sad about how people who were so passionate about their work could end up feeling totally burnt out and really dismayed about the work and the potential for change because the workplace was so chaotic, because there wasn't a strong culture and there wasn't a value placed on being organized and being effective. And that fascinated me. And I felt like you have all these people that are, you know, have committed to work in this place. They all share similar goals and vision and value for the change they want to make in the world. How do you keep them more connected and focused and motivated on the work rather than spending so much time stressing about, you know, misunderstandings or inefficient processes that were eating up too much time? And that really pivoted me to the field of organizational development, is being obsessed with wanting to remove some of the friction points that affect the experience of work, especially as it related to other people. So in 2017, I think close to when I met you for the first time, I was doing consulting, my own consulting in that area, the intersection between process and people within the workplace, and how do you create processes to make it much easier for people to communicate and collaborate and stay focused on those shared goals. And the gaming part came in very accidentally. I was working with some clients that were having trouble, and I was also putting together a couple of leadership courses and wanted to make the work more engaging and bringing in an experiential learning component. And I met one of my co-founders, Peter Williamson, who's a game designer. And we just started experimenting with using games to highlight different people's problem-solving styles or to showcase how people process information differently. And from there, the idea just snowballed. And, you know, what's now the company Barometer XP was a side project for about 2 years. And then we were a services company for 2 years and are now pivoting to develop a product to make it easier for other people to bring games and game-based experiential learning into their work. So it's very accidental that I ended up in the field of organizational development. I didn't even know what it was. I hadn't even heard of it until I was working in it. And so then to find myself speaking at the largest professional conference of the industry in the whole world was just a big one of those like, oh my gosh, how did I get here? This is crazy. Life is crazy moments for me.
That's such a cool story. And in some ways parallels my own journey. People ask me all the time, how did you end up in project management? And I tell them, you know, I was doing project management before I knew project management was a thing.
And you were doing it before it was cool.
Yeah. It sounds like what you said. I was doing organizational development. I just didn't know that that's what it was at the time. I had to catch up on the vocab around it.
Yeah. I had the same experience with project management too, as part of that transition, because I was organized and proactive and a good communicator at the company I was working at. They started having me manage projects and they paid for me to get the certification. And I was like, oh, wow, there's like a whole science and discipline around creating schedules and, you know, assigning workflow and looking for patterns in how people work. I've just been doing this very intuitively.
Yeah. Well, there's so much good stuff in that we want to unpack, but let's start with your conference. So ATD 23, which is the annual conference for the Association for Talent Development. If I'm correct, I believe you spoke on the limitations of behavioral assessments like DISC, Myers-Briggs, StrengthFinder, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
These assessments, they're always a crowd pleaser. I'm sure that was a super popular topic for you. I'm personally a little bit skeptical of how far people take them. I know people who've like even organized their whole hiring philosophy around, oh, we're missing this personal assessment type. How do we get the right balance of personality types on our team? Tell us a little bit about your topic, what you can share, and what limitations should leaders be kind of putting around and be wary of when they're using personality assessments?
Oh, this could be a very long conversation. I'll try to keep this pretty brief. I think with a lot of these assessments, one, they're really expensive and they're really long. And so just the process of taking them and then sharing the results and debriefing about the framework ends up being the outcome. It's like, let's do this tool. Let's talk about what it means. And then we're done. And so a lot of money and a lot of time is spent talking about the framework, and it can be really helpful. It can be super helpful to have language to understand how different people think or what strengths people bring or, you know, what different communication styles are. I think that's really valuable. But if that's the end goal, it's not that useful. A lot of my experience having taken those assessments is always, okay, I have this information, I have a better understanding, but now what? How do you turn that knowledge into real behavior change? And that's what the topic of my presentation was, is how do you use games as a really nice follow-on experience to actually practice putting that newfound knowledge and wisdom into action. So now that I know that, oh, Nicole is more detail oriented than I am, and that's why she gets really frustrated when I just give her some big creative ideas. Well, now how can I present an idea to Nicole in a way that's going to be better received by her? And that's uncomfortable for me. It takes practice. It's really hard to change the patterns of how you've acted, how you've communicated, how you've reacted to different situations. And so games just make a really nice way to practice in a very safe, confined, and controlled environment. So I totally agree that I think people take a lot of those assessments way too seriously and see them as like the definitive diagnostic rather than one tool. I do think they can offer value, but they can't stand alone. They have to be part of a broader learning or change initiative.
Yeah, I completely understand and agree with that. It's like so many things, right? It's a tool, it's a resource, it's meant to be a learning component, not an answer in and of itself necessarily, yeah. In a cleanly tied up package.
Yeah, and I think, again, this gets to a very broader philosophical thing, but we so badly, as humans living in this very complicated time, want there to be quick answers and solutions to our problems. And so we often just see a tool as, okay, I will do this assessment. I will purchase this software. I will, you know, sign up for this class. And like, I've checked the box and I've done something and the problem will go away. But the hard work is that it has to result in behavior change among multiple people. And there isn't a quick fix for that. You have to sort of have everybody on board to do the messy work of navigating interpersonal dynamics and sticking with it and trying and failing and reflecting. You're not going to get great outcomes from any learning or change journey that doesn't make space for that sort of messy muddling through.
Yeah, I also want to touch on something you said earlier about how frustrating it was to see all of these highly passionate people that were aligned on vision so burnt out. Mm-hmm. I've bounced back and forth between nonprofits and startups in my career. And I've definitely seen what you're describing. In some regards, you would think with nonprofits having such a clear vision that they would suffer less from burnout. But in a lot of cases, it's actually quite the opposite. You've done some work with nonprofits. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think that nonprofits, you have that buy-in about the mission, but they are so under-resourced that it's almost like at every turn, there's obstacles that don't need to be there because there isn't the money to solve them. So you're dealing with you know, outdated computers trying to run all of this software. So the computers keep crashing every time you have to update the database software to report your metrics, or you don't have the budget to hire more people, or the process of getting board approval to add a position is just so long that you're always understaffed and everybody's doing multiple jobs. So that's going to lead to burnout. And that also means that maybe people are doing work that's not really within their area of expertise and they don't have the training to do it. So that's going to be really frustrating. At every turn, things are more complicated than they need to be because they're really isn't the time or the money to spend on building that infrastructure of expertise and talent and tools and equipment and even process. And it just makes the work a lot more stressful and frustrating than it needs to be. And after a while, that goodwill and that passion towards the outcome of the work is slowly chipped away by the daily frustrations of the reality of working there.
Yeah, I think that another piece of that, and part of what I've always been so attracted to with what you're doing with Barometer XP, is in nonprofits, because the budgets are so tight, there's not as much margin for teams to bond in a lot of cases, or to invest in things like gaming that might have a slightly softer ROI. You know, when I worked in startups, if I wanted the budget to gamify the onboarding and adoption process, I had to make a business case for it, obviously, but it was a lot more easily entertained than something like that, which would be considered overhead cost in a nonprofit setting. And nonprofits have to keep their overhead costs low for their charity navigator ratings, that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And so I've always leaned heavily on games for team building. Let's talk about when it comes to selling ROI or building out the business case for something like gaming, because it does have so much deep and rich value to building those high performing teams that can be more effective and that can help mitigate some of that burnout when you've got such a cohesive, collaborative environment. It's really hard to do sometimes, right? Like when I'm talking about using gaming in the case for customer onboarding, there's a clear ROI. I can tie it back to customer churn or attrition, and I can actually figure out what is the cost benefit analysis. When you're using it with your internal teams, that ROI can be a lot softer and harder to demonstrate. What are leaders missing in their understanding of the return you get from investing in gaming as a service or even just team building?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think games are very often thought of as just a social way for people to bond. And that's definitely important. It's important for people to get to know, you know, to get to know your colleagues and your managers outside of just the context of your role at work. But games have the potential to be a lot more than that. And that's where I think the messaging can change, is if you, what we try to do at Barometer is make it, it's not just an opportunity to connect and to get to know people well, but it's a very deliberately constructed opportunity to practice communicating in different ways or try using different tools or talk about clarity of roles or clarity of expectations removed from the high stakes of the work. You know, within a game, it's a made up scenario and there's a clear objective, but it's not like a customer is going to be upset if you don't win the game or that it's going to drastically affect workloads. Everything is confined to the time you spend within the game. So I think there's a really strong case to be made in that you're simultaneously learning these really essential interpersonal skills or soft skills, essential skills, emotional intelligence, whatever you want to call it. You're working on those skills and practicing using them while also building trust and building psychological safety and strengthening accountability and confidence. So you're doing two really important essential culture and organizational development, working towards two different outcomes at the same time, especially if you're pairing it with reflective conversations and making sure that people are taking away the insights and being able to apply what happened in the game to what happens outside the game. It's really a much more valuable learning experience than just watching a video or having a conversation, because it gets into that experiential and applied learning model.
Yeah, I love that. And it sounds like in a lot of ways, it's kind of a similar use case to what we would use it for in a customer onboarding setting, right? It's trying to combat attrition to some extent, whether it's customers leaving because they didn't learn properly how to use your tools or your services, or your team is leaving because they're just so burnt out and exhausted from how frustrating it is to get anything mm-hmm. done.
Yeah. And there's more, I feel like the last few years, one of the small silver linings to come out of it is there seems to be a wider recognition of like, oh, you have to take good care of people if you want them to not only stay, but to be fully engaged and fully motivated. And a way to do that is to make people see that they're part of a team, their contributions matter, not just for the outcome of the work, but for everybody else on the team, and to feel more connected and accountable for your piece of it and bought into the outcome. If you can cultivate that sense of a team being way more than the sum of the parts, people are more likely to stay focused when things get tough, or to, you know, to stay engaged, you know, even if they're not working on the things that are their favorites, because they feel connected and accountable to the people around them.
So that kind of gets into different levels of gaming that can be used in team building all the way up to organizational development. You've done some games for both our Ambition Unboxed community and also for a team I was leading. You know, when we talk team building, a lot of times it can be simple things like, okay, let's go play Scriblio. We're not really learning anything. We're just blowing off some steam and having fun together. But some of the games you've led us through, or led my teams through, like the amusement park game that you had been doing for a while there, they're really engaging. They're really collaborative. They force the team to like kind of roll up their sleeves. They're almost like role-playing or wargaming together different scenarios. So tell us a little bit about how you guys are thinking about this spectrum of games, from your quick 20 minutes, let's just have fun and blow off steam, all the way through to these sort of like role-playing wargaming type scenarios where you're really getting to see how different members of the team work together in solving problems.
Yeah, that's where my co-founder, Peter, he has an architecture and design background and now uses it for games. He has such a great understanding of what are the different mechanics within a game. Is there a puzzle element? Is it competitive versus collaborative? Is it a sort of exploration game where there is no right answer, but the journey is the goal? There's so many different types of games out there that foster different interpersonal dynamics. So if it's a puzzle game, then you have to have that sense of persistence and grit and just being willing to try a lot of things and fail until you figure it out. And so that's a really valuable skill in the workplace. And so playing a game that has that mechanic at the center of it is going to help practice those skills and see what the strengths and opportunities for growth are on a team and be able to practice it. If it's a game where it's more physical, I mean, even something like sports, so much of that is iterative learning. Is you try something and you adjust a little bit and you try again and you see how you get better over time, and you have to make use of the resources and the parameters that are laid out. And that's a whole different skill set. So he is really great at figuring out how do you create a game to get to the particular type of team dynamic outcome that you're looking to explore. And that's really what our whole framework is about, is looking at what are the needs of a team, what are their strengths, what are their opportunities to grow in terms of their culture, in terms of how they work together, and then how do you pick the right game to further that conversation and to further the growth in that area.
But also, Barometer XP takes it a little bit farther than just like, here's the game, play it, have fun, best of luck figuring it out. You also pair services with it. Right. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we pair services, and then we also, for other people who provide those facilitation and consulting services, we give them the tools to bring games in. Yeah, so the services piece is we learn a lot about what does a team need? Where are they in their learning journey? What are their goals? And we craft a customized learning experience specifically around what that team needs. And a lot of the time, so let's say someone says, oh, we need to do a half a day retreat. We'll say, great, you know, what expectations do people have for the retreat? Is this a team of people that already knows each other really well, or are there some newer people? What takeaways do you want to have? And based on that, we have a few different frameworks and tools that we use to pick the right games, but then also pick, okay, what are the reflective questions that we need to ask to bring the insights and get teams to those outcomes? What other learning content do we need to put in? Maybe we need to do some more traditional training on a particular skill and showcase that skill and then have them play a game to practice using that skill. So it's really customized. And that's what we're also trying to train other experienced practitioners in organizational development and leadership development to do, is to work games in to be one of their tools within their broader programs, from everything from the picking the game to leading the game to facilitating the reflective conversation to make the connection between the game and the real life work environment.
Yeah, that reflective conversation, that is such a key differentiator, I feel like. The team, they'll go through the game and you'll take the team and you'll lead a discussion where they're doing a postmortem, mm-hmm. right? Or what did we notice about how we're working together on this? What did we notice about communication styles? It's so key, that reflective conversation you lead teams through. How did you guys end up at that spot?
Yeah, well, so the client that I was working with when I first met Peter, it was a small nonprofit, 5 people at the time, lovely people, really liked each other. But every Friday when they had to put together this newsletter, it was like all chaos broke loose because, you know, this person wanted to get all the writing done early and this person liked to leave things for the last minute. And this person was focused on, you know, putting, you know, the technology piece and not the content piece. And I could see very clearly what was driving all the frustrations, but they were too in the weeds to see that. And a big piece was, how do I encourage self-awareness and situational awareness? How do you get people to practice that when our lives are so busy and so chaotic? And because of that, we're on autopilot a lot of the time and are just reacting to what's around us and going along our singular path of, you know, what our goals are. And we're not really noticing how our work affects other people or how other people's work impacts us. And so creating the game as a space to practice that noticing and practice that, I realize that when there's a really tight deadline, I tend to withdraw and I get a little bit defensive and I can see that maybe I'm kind of a pain in the butt to work with. I don't want to be like that. I don't want my colleagues to see me as really difficult. Now that I'm aware of that, here's how I can change it. And so it was a way to hold up a mirror to this group of people, to any group of people, and say, this is how you work together. These are the dynamics that come up when things are good or when things are difficult. Is this how you want to act together? Is this the best that you can do? And where is there room for change? And people are often really grateful for a chance to practice that self-reflection because we don't have that many opportunities for it, not only in our work, but I think in our lives in general. And people tend to be really grateful to have that check-in of like, oh yeah, am I being the version of myself that I want to be? Am I coming across that way to other people? Are there things that I could do so that, you know, I'm having a more positive impact on the people around me? And are there things that I can ask for of the people around me that would make my life easier?
It's so key. It's so key because self-awareness is such a key component in both leadership, but also self-leadership, mm-hmm. right? And it's something we often treat as an individual problem. You need to become more self-aware. But the fact is, we need everyone on our teams to become more self-aware. And also, there's our individual self-awareness. And also there's the misconceptions when you put individuals in a group together about how one person might be interpreting something different than another person and just all those inner dynamics.
Yeah, I would say, well, one, I don't know that I would love to hear if anybody has a story where the conversation of you need to be more self-aware has ever gone well. I think that the vast majority of tension in the workplace comes from really small misunderstandings or making assumptions that are incorrect for what's motivating other people. We're not really good at making sense of differences in a constructive way. It's much easier to just to say, oh, this person's asking this question. It means they're trying to sabotage me. End of conversation, rather than they look at this problem in a different way than I do. They also want you know, have the same idea of success and want to have a great outcome. So how do we work together to understand each other better? And I think working on those skills of how do we communicate with people who see things differently, not just about, you know, it's not just diversity in terms of race and gender and, you know, sexual orientation and culture, but in communication styles, in thinking styles, in the language that we use to describe our process. And the more that we can see what's going on behind other people's thinking, see how their brains work and how they're responding to different situations, the much better the outcomes can be, because we're not just all resorting to our sort of lizard brain habit and reflexes.
Yeah, I know I'm really hanging on this topic, but I also think another key thing in what you're sharing is having a third party or an independent neutral facilitator. Yeah. When you try to go through this activity as a team, and every team that is high performing goes through a storming phase. I'm not suggesting that you avoid conflict. I'm a big proponent of appropriate conflict within team building. But it's hard to do it as a group without bringing your judgment to it. And when you can have a neutral facilitator help illuminate those miscommunications or those misunderstandings or those assumptions, it's just a safer space to do it in.
Yeah, absolutely. To be made aware in the moment of, hey, do you realize the way that you asked that question could come off in a couple of different ways? Is there a better way to say it? And just, you know, catch yourself in the moment and have a do-over. You get a real do-over opportunity in the context of a game.
So good. It's so good. Guys, I love so much of what Barometer XP is doing. I really had to bring this to you. Well, speaking of that, I've been lucky enough to participate as a beta tester for some of the big things you guys have going on, which is probably one of my favorite things to do with my free time. What can you tell us about some of the big things you guys have planned and where the company's going?
Yeah, and it's great because you've seen us at just about every stage we've been at so far. So as you know, for the last 2 years, we've been only offering facilitation services, but as we've built relationships with other people who lead teams or who, you know, facilitate retreats or do leadership development programs, recognizing that there's a bigger need for experiential learning to work through that messy behavior change piece, we decided, okay, what if we formalize the approach that we've been using and we make it available to other people? And that's what we've been focusing on the last 6 months. And that's what you've been testing is the productized version of what we do. So we've been developing a very quick assessment tool that is meant to, the assessment is not the end goal. The assessment is meant to make it really easy to get next steps for how do you use this information to bring play-based experiential learning to a team and make the follow-up really easy. So we have the assessment, we have the assessment linking to a catalog of games and different playlists of games that explore different aspects of team culture and of organizational development. So things like identity and belonging, communicating about complexity, impact and legacy. So all of these different dimensions of working together. Yeah, so we're building the product. We're getting ready to officially launch it in the next few weeks and hope to get teams that want to take the assessment and other practitioners that want to start using our tools in their work to further build out our product and the community of practice around game-based learning and facilitation. So we have a lot of really big plans in the future, and it's really exciting.
It's going to be so cool. I'm just calling it now. I just think it's going to be the coolest thing. And because, you know, even someone like me who is a big proponent of gaming, there's not a lot of great resources out there to help you implement this. It's like a mini project. It takes a lot of R&D time on the leader's behalf to go out and find and figure out how to curate all the games that will help their teams. And you guys are going to just make all of that easy. So I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. And the community of people that you're already a part of, we want to have experts, people who think about this, people who have a lot of work experience, a lot of leadership experience, a lot of team experience, test these games and make sure that these, you know, we are putting out valuable games and that we're looking at what are the different variations you can put on this game to explore different elements of working as a team, to explore different outcomes. I often find the problem with the internet, how to say, there's just too much information. You can go a Google team building game and you're going to get 100,000, at least 100,000 results. A lot of them will be sponsored and you don't really know if those are, you know, reviews that you can trust. You don't know anything about the people who are curating these. So we're trying to take that guesswork and that time away and just give that time back to people and say, this is already a very well-curated and vetted list of excellent activities and how to use them and what types of learning outcomes you can get, what types of conversations these games inspire, so that it takes a lot of the hard work out of wanting to bring games into the workplace.
Well, and that brings up a second ROA point, which is there's investing the money, right, into actually wanting to put budget behind something like this, team building, team learning. But then there's also the time component. And when you're working with teams that are burnt out because they're already stretched really thin, what would you say to senior leaders who are listening to this episode who have the ability to set the priority of their team's time on where they should fit something like this into the overall list of tasks or just how their time is being allocated?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think of the way a lot of the resources are going now, whether it's training or whether it's employee wellness, is focusing on the individual. But for any company to thrive, you need healthy teams. And that's very different. A team is not just a collection of individuals. For a real team, you need there to be that chemistry and that confidence and that trust in people and that accountability. And that just doesn't happen overnight. You need to invest in cultivating that and in maintaining and sustaining it. Most of the problems that people are working on in their jobs now are not things that one or even two people can solve. They're things that you need teams of people who have very different experience and different areas of expertise and different levels of understanding to work together. And if they don't have a good way to share that information and to understand it and to analyze it and to create from it, you're not going to get the best outcome. So the more you can invest in helping that group of people become more than just the sum of their parts, the better the outcome, the better the retention, the more you're going to get out of that time and effort.
I would totally echo that. And I would actually say you can't afford not to spend the time on this, because it's exactly like you said, a group of people together working on following a process is a sum of its parts. But when you get a team that has properly melded and is in a collaborative lockstep with one another, that is more than the sum of its parts. And if your team is stretched thin, you can't afford to have them working in an ineffective or less than manner.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of talk now about, you know, creating psychological safety in the workplace. And it takes practice to, you know, obviously we say we want, you know, everybody says, I want feedback, or, you know, I feel like people should be able to admit when they made a mistake or they need help. But in reality, when push comes to shove, those things are not well received. So we all say that it's something we value, but are not good at doing it ourselves. And so finding a way to practice that and to figure out what's a better way to respond when somebody says, you know what, I just don't know how to do this. I thought that I could, I need help. You know, rather than your first reaction to be, you should know this and I trusted you, to be like, okay, I'm invested in this being successful. What can I do? Or who else can we bring in to help out with this? Where can we reallocate resources? Those are all new muscles to flex and new sort of neural pathways and communication habits to put into place. And you have to practice them. And so if you say that you really value inclusivity and psychological safety and, you know, personal development, you have to make the space for those things to be done and for people to learn and get better at doing those things.
Yes. And that is where we want to work. That is where most people want to work. You get that right, and, you know, your jobs will advertise themselves.
Yeah. I mean, and just in the last few years, the number of people that I know that have taken lower paying jobs because it's a more inclusive and, you know, person-centered and flexible work environment. There's a lot of people, I think, that are reprioritizing and rethinking what they expect and what they will put up with from their employer.
We're not advocating that you lower the salary. We're just saying if a company gets these things right, but their budget is smaller, they have a competitive advantage in the marketplace.
Yes, absolutely.
Like many industries, best-selling business book lists are male-dominated. Despite their popularity, their lessons often oversimplify or even completely ignore the reality that many working women face. We're tired of reading business books that just don't seem to get us. The Ambition Unboxed Book Club gets it. Every month, we feature a business or leadership book written by a woman or non-binary author, like Invisible Women by Carolyn Criado Perez. This eye-opening book exposes how biased data sets quite literally designs a world for the stereotypical default male, and how overlooking data bias often leads to failed programs and products. The Ambition Unboxed Book Club is designed for busy, multitasking women like you. You can listen to the audiobook while making dinner or running errands, and join our online community and monthly discussions at your convenience. You'll also get access to exclusive content and resources to deepen your learning. Don't miss this opportunity to connect with other like-minded women and learn from the best-kept secrets in business and leadership. Join us today at ambitionunboxed.com and discover your potential.
All right, well, let's switch gears a little bit, Alex, and talk about your personal growth and evolution as a leader. You mentioned something earlier that a lot of people would say is counterintuitive for a CEO. You said that you're an empath. A lot of stereotypes out there about how women are already too emotional to be leaders. How have you seen your tendency as an empath to either help or hurt you in your new role as CEO?
Oh, I think mostly it helps. I'm good at building strong relationships and maintaining strong relationships. It helps me if, you know, I have to give feedback a lot. And I think anybody who works with me, whether it's my team, whether it's, you know, partners or clients or anything, they know that it's going to come from a very thoughtful, well-intentioned place because they experience the high empath side of me. It does mean that I put probably too much time into planning tough conversations, or I might factor in a little too much, you know, how are other people going to respond to this? But in the end, I think it gets me better outcomes because I'm deliberate, because I'm not just sort of shooting off at the mouth and saying something in a way that's going to get me into trouble. So I think mostly it serves me well, and I'm really proud that it's not your stereotypical leadership path.
Very key insight that you have there. And we're seeing this in studies, right? There's lots of studies that have come out that have shown that the average woman or women within certain organizations on average can be better leaders than their male counterparts. And it comes down to emotional intelligence in a lot of those cases, which just goes to show that that whole stereotype about women being too emotional is maybe actually accurate and a superpower.
Yeah, I don't think the problem is the women. I think the problem is the existing corporate culture.
Right. The one that tells you you have to leave your humanity and your emotions at home.
Yeah, I mean, look how far that's gotten us. I mean, there's an epidemic of loneliness in this country, which is crazy to me. I mean, that's another thing that really drives me is when work is an opportunity for you to be part of something bigger than yourself that involves other people. And I'm not saying work has to be the main source of social connection in your life, but it can be a source of meaning and connection. And it's a shame if it's not. It's like the lowest hanging fruit of how to find connection in the workplace. But the way so many modern workplaces are set up, they're very isolating. They're very sort of scarcity mindset and much more driven by purely quantitative efficiency and productivity and not creativity and collaboration and communication. I just think that's so tragic. I think there's a real opportunity to physically and psychologically improve people's lives by making work more connective and meaningful.
I think it also just goes to show it's not that men are unemotional. We've all seen men lose their temper, fly off, shoot off at the hip. It's sort of which emotions were traditionally considered accepted in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And some of the emotions that women are more in tune with fall on the, this can help move the organization forward side. Whereas anger, it can be used for good. if leveraged appropriately and smartly. But in its traditional form, a lot of times that's actually shutting productivity and team building and morale and everything down within an organization.
Yeah, it's funny because I think my empathy and sort of my value of collaboration and team above all else from day one has really affected how we've run the company. I remember when there were initially four of us co-founders at the beginning of this, and we spent months putting our initial operating agreement together because the traditional language of operating agreements is based on the premise that everybody's going to try to screw everybody else over. And, you know, how do you protect what's yours? And how do you, you know, it's very punitive. And we all said, this is not the foundation for building a company and for building trust. And we had to put our whole agreement together from scratch, not using the templates that are out there, because we just didn't want those underlying assumptions to guide how we did things and how we evaluated each other's performance and contributions. And I think there's so many structures in how a lot of companies, a lot of workplaces are set up where the foundations are built on these assumptions that don't really connect with our values and that they really seep in. They affect how people treat each other. They affect how people are compensated. They affect who wants to work in that environment. And too often it's hidden. I think you need to make those things more visible and make sure that the infrastructure that you have really does reflect the values and the culture that you want people to experience.
That might be my favorite story of our discussion here today. That's just such an embodiment of what we say we're about all the time. And it's a legal document, which means you were willing to go to bat from a legal perspective, which a lot of people, you know, that's where they clam up and they shut down.
And it was not a pretty process. I mean, these were like multiple 2-3 hour conversations where I think all of us would have been like, we just want to be done with this. But we felt like it was more important to do it right and to make sure that no matter what happened, whether the company succeeded, if we all stayed in it, if somebody wanted to leave, that it didn't mess up our relationship and our respect for each other as people. And that really set the tone for everything that we've done since. One of the four original founders has since left, and we have a great relationship with him because it wasn't like he's stealing a piece of this or he's, you know, he's out to be a competitor. We, through that whole process, we really understand where each other's hearts are and where each other's minds are coming from. And we still have a great relationship and we partner and you know, we're sort of advisors to each other, and it's great.
Oh, I love that so much. Okay, I have one last question and then we're going to switch over to our listener question. So this season's topic is Ambition as a Rebellion, where we're highlighting individuals and organizations that are leaning into ambition to upend the status quo in some way. Tell us, what is the rebel streak in your work with Barometer XP? How do you hope to leave a positive impact on our workplaces?
Oh man, I get in trouble here. I look at how most leadership is done and how most businesses operate, and I have a bit of a burn it all down mentality. The older I get and the more experience I have, I think capitalism is so damaging to our health and our psyche and our relationships. I think my rebellion is in trying to build a company that is based on a totally different set of values and metrics and pure productivity and purely, you know, pure profitability, but really building values and culture and connection in from the beginning. You know, we're early on, we'll see how it goes, but those values are not something I'm willing to compromise on, even if it means Barometer doesn't get as profitable as we can be, or we miss out on some opportunities. I just think integrity and values have to be front and center and have to be really visible and factored into every decision in how a company is run.
I love this. I love this so much because I'm an econ minor. A lot of people don't know that about me, but I don't think that what you're saying is that capitalism is the problem. I hear that you're saying our current interpretation of what capitalism is the problem.
Yes.
That it's in a lot of cases gone off the rails. and that we can reimagine it. We're not stuck with the status quo. And there is actually great examples of companies who have done this, who have prioritized their values and their alignment and still gone on to be wildly successful. Yes. So I wish you guys the best. I think you're off onto a great start. You've got some really interesting things you're doing. If you're successful, our workplaces will be a happier place to operate in.
That is, if that's the legacy that I can leave on this world, I will feel like it was a totally fulfilling and satisfying and meaningful time on earth for me.
All right. So let's switch over to listener questions. This question is from Fran in Chicago. Fran says, I believe that team building is incredibly important, but I'm really struggling to get people to participate in team building activities at my new company. I've been told that many members of the engineering team won't even come to the annual holiday party unless they're being required to do so. What are your thoughts on requiring people to participate in team building activities?
Oh, that's a tough question. I don't think you require them to participate in team building. I think you build team building into required training or a meeting that everybody has to be at. I don't think that you say team building is the goal of this. I think there's so many ways that you can frame doing those types of activities as ways of creating better coordination between departments or even like process improvement. You know, if those are engineers, they're obviously going to be very focused on process and efficiency. And so what's something that they're frustrated by? Chances are it has to do with communicating, sharing information, interdependence with other departments or other roles within the organization. So you can couch something as a process improvement and work some team building into it. And then it's making sure that people understand you're not just doing this activity for the goodwill of it, but that it actually has an outcome, a very practical, applicable, measurable outcome.
That's such a great answer. This is why I see you as an ambitious and rebellious leader, because you're taking things and breaking them down to their core components and saying, no, we just need to think about it differently.
Yeah. Somebody once made the analogy, and I love this. I'm very proud of this and use it, is that games are like the Trojan horse. We say, oh, we're doing this other thing, but there happen to be games involved, but they don't know until they're already playing a game, already learning from the game, that they're doing any type of team building because it's part of this broader learning or development initiative.
That's so true. I really echo that sentiment because that's in a lot of cases when you're gamifying an onboarding experience or something. That's exactly what's happening, right? You're using games as the delivery mechanism because it's going to get you better engagement and it's going to get you better retention of the material in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where, you know, the whole framework that we've come up with for different depths of play and the different areas of impact, the reason we came up with that is because so many people reflexively roll their eyes when you mention anything having to do with team building or game or activity. And so it's like, well, let's come up with another way to talk about it and a way to connect it to things that are going to be really important to people, you know, problems that do affect their work on a day-to-day basis or that have an impact on morale or outcomes. Then you slip the game in.
So great. This has been such a great conversation, Alex. Why don't you go ahead and tell everyone any parting thoughts, where they can find you and follow you on social media and all the places?
Yes, definitely come play with us. We do monthly game sessions where we demo our product and play a couple of games. You can go to our website, barometerxp.com, and there's a little drop down for events that'll take you to all of the workshops and demos that we have. There's also a lot of other cool stuff on our website, a blog about how to use games and the theory behind games. I'm on LinkedIn, Alexandra Sukman. Love connecting with people on LinkedIn. Please reach out if you have questions or thoughts or if this inspired you to do anything. If you want a game suggestion, I could talk about this all the time. Yeah, I think those are the two big things.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. We'll put all those links in the show notes so that it's easy to get back to them for everyone. And I hope you get some great game time in.
Thank you so much, Nicole. It was great talking to you.
That's our episode for today. Thank you so much for spending the time with us. If you found today's episode helpful, please pull out your phone and share the link with one or two friends that would also benefit from hearing it. If you really loved it, please leave a review in iTunes to help others find the podcast. Itching to meet other ambitious women? connect with members of our community online at the Ambition Unboxed Facebook group. Ambition Out Loud is produced by Cultivate Inc. LLC. Today's music is by Steve Rice Music. Until next time, remember, your ambition is a beautiful thing.
I'm gonna go down swinging. There'll be a tale to tell. Like a boxer in the ring, I'll give my everything until I hear that final bell. Well, I'm gonna go down swinging, whether I'm right or wrong. I know without a doubt, until the lights go out, you're gonna hear me singing this song.